Welcome back to the program. Back in the 60s and early 70s, we harbored a fantasy about a gender-neutral world. We thought that if only we gave dolls to boys and guns to girls, we could turn back the clock on culturalization and achieve a kind of equality in the battle of the sexes. Modern science, about 35 years of research, and common sense have now prevailed, and we know that none of this is true. Our gender differences are not only hardwired into us by evolutionary and neurological biology, but those differences also provide a diversity and a difference that enhances our relationships and the way we work. If only we could figure out a way to get along. This is the work of our guest this morning, Luann Brizendine. She's a clinical professor of psychiatry at the University of California, San Francisco. She received her degree in neurobiology from the University of California, Berkeley, her medical degree from Yale, and she did her internship and residency in psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. She's been on the faculty of both Harvard and UCSF. She's the author of the best-selling book, The Female Brain. It is my pleasure to have her here to talk about her latest work just out in paperback, The Male Brain. Dr. Luann Brizendine, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on your show today.
Great to have you here. One of the things that we thought for a long time is that the brain was this kind of unisex thing, that the differences were relatively minor. We know a lot more about that now.
Yes, indeed we do. And, of course, scientists have known for a long time that the moment of conception, of course, we end up being male or female. But up until 8 weeks of fetal life, our brains are all what we call female-type brains. And it's not until 8 weeks when the tiny testicles in the male start to pump out huge amounts of testosterone that marinate the brain, changing it into male brain circuits, that the male brain is formed.
And in that formation, in that circuitry that's formed as early as that period of time, there is a fundamental difference in how those circuits start to activate as time goes on.
Indeed, that's true. Of course, we must be clear that the human male and female brain are more alike than different because, after all, we are the same species. But there are these significant differences in male and female, and evolutionary biologists believe that the reason for that is that females need to have the pregnancies and learn to take care of helpless infants and help them survive. Our human species has very helpless infants for a number of years. And the male had to be the provider and protector. So we have different functions and have had for hundreds of thousands of years as our species has developed. So that male brain starts to run all those male brain circuits at about the age of 9 to 15 years old on the hormone testosterone, which fuels all those male brain circuits. As a matter of fact, it increases from 9 to 15, 200 to 250%.
One of the things you talk about is how the differences in those circuits are that with respect to the male brain, there are more analytical circuits, I guess, for lack of a better description, and in the female brain, more emotional circuits.
Well, it's very interesting. There have been several studies that show, for example, when your spouse comes home, your female partner comes home and is all upset about something that happened during that day, and she's upset and the male is looking at her and he says very quickly, "Honey, you know what you should do." We females want him to say, "Honey, I know how you feel." But it's been shown that the male brain quickly goes into what's called cognitive empathy circuits, which runs through a system called the temporal parietal junction hub, and quickly goes out of what females use more, which is called the emotional empathy circuits, which run through the mirror neurons in the brain. So yes, indeed, that's the cover of the book. The reason I made them have a duct tape brain is because male brains get to the fix-it solution through their analytical empathy or their cognitive empathy, and we females need to understand that males do that very quickly because they are trying to help us. It's out of their love and trying to get us out of that emotional state. They are trying to fix it, so they have what I call the fix-it fast brain.
And in fact, these are things that are hardwired from millions of years of evolution.
They are very much hardwired through millions of years of evolution, as well as, we remember, culture also trains us into male and female typical behaviors as well. So actually, scientists believe now that about 50% of that brain circuit wiring is made from the genes and the hormones that lay everything down. And then the other half, though, is co-created by how we were raised, our experiences in being raised as a male or female. So it's about half of the circuits are made out of from the genes and hormones, and then the other half is not biological, but actually becomes biological. For example, Jeff, you know, were you born learning and knowing how to play the piano from day one? No, you weren't. So all of us, if we learn something, we have to do practice. And as we do that, for example, they've shown that violinists that practice 8 hours a day increase that size of the brain that's for playing violin up to 6 or 7 times larger in that brain area than the rest of us who don't play violin. So anything that we do over and over and over again, including behaviors we do over, increases the size of that area of our brain. So isn't that interesting how an environment or how we're raised or what we learn to practice to do basically changes our brain circuits as well. So yes, we pop out with a male or female brain that has a propensity for doing those things, and then we enhance those by being raised as a boy or a girl. I remember when my son was about 4 years old, you know, we feminists back in that day that you mentioned, we all thought we would raise our sons to be these emotionally sensitive boys. We'd give them gender-neutral toys. I can remember my son grabbing, I gave him a doll for Christmas 1 year, amongst other things, but he grabs her out of her little box and immediately seizes her by the torso and starts to use her long legs, stabbing the air, saying, "Aha, take that." You know, he's using them as swords. So I realized at that point that in our 20s, when we thought we would do a different raising of boys to be gender neutral, we had a thing or two coming to us when we had our own boys.
What difference does contemporary culture make? In other words, contemporary culture that may be trying to change these norms and these biological and neurological mindsets?
Well, remember, you know, evolution takes not just one or two generations. Mm-hmm. It takes tens of thousands of years for you know, kind of natural selection and that kind of change in parts of our DNA, of course, and selection of various mutations. But when we have a culture that has become males and females, for example, females now go into the military, for example. Females are astronauts. And we're doing all kinds of things that at some point were just, say, for the other sex. Lots of guys becoming nurses these days. So, you know, as we, and there's more 50-50 parenting, the mommy brain and the daddy brain are, you know, doing more of the care together since both of them are out in the workplace. So that there are things that from generation to generation do get tweaked. And because our brains are such amazing learning machines, we can adapt, Jeff. We can adapt very quickly after a generation or two. And I think that, you know, in the mating game, as we say, females in their 20s will choose the kind of man who's going to be what she needs for a partner and a mating partner for what's appropriate during that generation's lifestyle. So, you know, women in my generation who were feminists, we wanted to choose male partners that were going to do a 50-50 split with the kids and the household chores and all those kinds of things. And, of course, we had to wait till now for it to become more of a reality. So our brains are very good learning machines, and we can learn to do different tasks, whether we're male or female.
One of the things that's so interesting about this is that much of what you look at in terms of the evolutionary biology of this revolves around the kind of domestic and traditional role-playing landscape. And that when we take this into a contemporary society and we put male and female brains in the workplace, both with similar objectives, it changes the dynamic fundamentally.
Yes, I think that, I mean, one of the big, big shifts, of course, if you look from 1900 till now and you look at the number of people who worked on farms and worked with their muscles and worked with their hands, you know, we've gone more and more and more to technology helping us do all of all our tasks, so that the issue of male strength and male brawn is not as much of an issue as it used to be. Of course, there's still activities and jobs that you, where you need to be very strong, but that the ratio of that has changed dramatically, Jeff. You think just that alone. So in the workplace, working side by side, male and female, watching your colleagues at work do the same things that you're doing from a very early age. I talk to young people now, you know, in their early and mid 20s, and they really, they've always grown up with their parents doing both things. So it's really been a paradigm shift in the last 30 years.
It's interesting that as far as the young people go, there's been a paradigm shift in the culturalization. And for those that are older, there are other factors you talk about that enter into it, particularly what happens to the more mature male brain.
Yes, the mature male brain is a wonderful place, isn't it, Jeff? What does your partner say? At any rate, my husband is in that age, and I talk a lot in the book about how, of course, those male brain circuits that have been running on high testosterone. Now, remember, all during our lives, males have about 10 times more testosterone than females have. We have a small amount which drives our sex drive and our libido. Males, you guys have, for example, a male only needs about a testosterone level of 300 to 400 for sexual function, but much of his younger years, from his teens, 20s, 30s, 40s, he's running a level maybe 600 to 1,000, so he's got double, sometimes triple, what he needs to run sexual function. We don't actually know what all that extra is doing there, but some of us women have hypotheses. At any rate, by the time a man reaches 50, 60, 70, his testosterone, of course, has peaked and has started to ebb in something we call andropause. As the male testosterone gradually declines, it usually stays up above the level needed for sexual function, of course, in half to three-quarters of men in their 50s and 60s are not noticing too much of a change in the sexual function. But that ebbing of the testosterone, not running those circuits at such a high test level, does make men be able to pause and smell the roses a little bit more, and does not have that 0 to 60 fast sometimes trigger for either anger or aggression, or even that fast of a sexual response.
The other part of it that you talk about is not only does the testosterone start to go down around those ages, but the estrogen level increases.
Yes, the relative ratio in the male all during his previous years has been predominantly testosterone, and it gradually shifts to having the ratio be a little bit more estrogen than he's had. And the nice thing about that for men also is that estrogen actually stimulates, as we women know, another hormone in the brain called oxytocin. Now, that's not OxyContin, it's oxytocin, and it is called the love and cuddle hormone. Since we're getting close to Valentine's Day, I guess if you want to stimulate your oxytocin as much as possible. Now, touch, that soft stroking, as you can imagine, seeing a mother stroking the head of her sleeping baby, that rate of stroking releases oxytocin in a person, in the baby, and also that kind of soft stroking can release oxytocin during a massage or something. So skin touching at a certain slow pace has been shown to release oxytocin, and estrogen is needed to make your brain make a lot of that love and cuddle hormone.
The one thing that becomes clearer and clearer through all of this is the critical role that these chemicals, that these hormones play in so many aspects of cognitive function as well.
Yes, of course, you know, our brain circuits have so much going on that's needed. You know, the brain sucks up, you know, up to 80% of our energy in our body, and so it's really one of the important things is good having the right balance running through your brain circuits of estrogen and or testosterone. So it is very important for not only sexual function, but also we know for cognitive function, an area of the brain called the hippocampus, is the area for short-term memories. It's that part of the brain where, you know how you remembered something in your bedroom as you're walking out the door and you're going back to find it, and your brain can remember as you're going what you're going to find. That's your hippocampus. If you forget what you're going to find, they found that women, as their estrogen declines and even men as their testosterone declines, sometimes have more what's called that short memory deficit, mm-hmm. and aren't able to remember what they were going into that bedroom for. Now, that's normal. That happens to a lot of us at all ages, maybe, you know, once or twice a day. But if it's happening, you know, 5 or 10 times a day, often the hormones are running low in the brain.
One of the things that sort of shows how a lot of this plays out is what you talk about with respect to what you call the daddy brain.
You know, that was, if you ask me what was the most interesting thing I found out about researching the material for this book, it's the daddy brain actually is formed. The husband-wife laying next to each other, while she's pregnant, her skin cells, her sweat glands start to give off pheromones. Now, pheromones are what's called airborne hormones, and they waft over into the nose of the daddy-to-be and actually stimulate his brain to make more of a hormone called prolactin. Prolactin means prolactation or for milk, and that's usually a hormone in females. We don't know what it's doing in the male, but we know it's there, and it goes up in the male 30% during his partner's pregnancy, and also suppresses his testosterone level, which goes down 20 or 30%. As well as all of a sudden, the brain scan studies show that his auditory circuits that hear infants crying actually get very much better over the course of that 9 months, even before the baby is born. So something is happening to change the brain circuits and hormones that are running in the daddy brain, so that by the time his baby is born, he actually has a brain that's triggered and formed to take care of the baby. That may evolutionarily have been very important if you think about how many women died in childbirth and there's a helpless baby. The male had to be prepared to take care of it for survival of the species, too. You have to have at least two adults available to take care of this little guy.
And what studies have been done to analyze this in situations where there's adoption, for example?
Fascinating question, because, you know, adopted parents, within about 6 months of actually physically taking care of the child, so touching the child, dressing the child, bathing, cleaning the child, feeding the child, all of that touching, which we talked about releasing oxytocin in both a baby and in the parents, that formation and that ability to hear the infant cry actually forms, if you will, a parenting brain circuits in the adoptive parents. So fascinating pieces of work that have been done on adoptive parents.
Hmm. Earlier you talked a little bit about particularly boys 9 to 15 and the release of testosterone and what's going on with them. What is all of this research into the teenage brain, the teenage boy brain, telling us about learning differences between boys and girls, and arguably how should we be responding to that?
That's a great question. You know, the male brain, I always joke that there's only one page that women have to read in the male brain, and that's page 33 in this book. I turn to that. That's the cliff notes for women to this book, page 33, which has that graph on it, the testosterone going up between age 9 and 15, that 200%. I say it's like a boy having one glass of beer when he's 9, but he's guzzling down gallons of it by the time he's 15. So it really increases a lot. And I think that what that says for teachers and educational specialists and all of our thinking about how to raise our sons is that this testosterone fuel starts to run his circuits for movement, for needing to move. And even at younger ages, it's been shown that, you know, boys, on average, 9 out of 10 boys don't sit as still as girls do. So I think it argues for having PE classes. It argues for having sports. It really argues for the necessity of having boys at that age be corralled by a coach and really, you know, having his really sort of You know how moms will say, go run off your energy, but boys need to be physically really very active. Now, girls do too, and we know, I mean, since Title IX has come around and girls are playing so many more sports, it's fabulous for girls and it's great for learning teamwork and all those things that you learn being a part of a team, but it's something that I'm really worried about in our school systems as budgets have been cut and we're cutting out some of the really important things for boys being able to then go back and attend to what's going on in the classroom. So boys need lots of physical breaks. They need to be up and move. Girls from a very young age, 9 out of 10 of them can sit very still and do what the teacher wants for the whole day. And the boys are considered to be disruptive in the classroom often, some of the more active ones, but actually it's not, I think I would take it out of that pejorative language called, disruptive, and it's just the boy's wiring and his circuits that need to move. They need to maybe have a really active PE class before the school day starts. So get them up and have them go out and run the track for a mile or two before they take their first class.
Is there something happening neurologically or biologically that accounts for the fact that we are seeing this problem in a greater sense today with respect to boys in school situations? Certainly in our generation, we didn't have this information, we didn't have this research, and yet boys in some respects did better.
Well, I think I have a couple of responses to that, and since the kind of educational history is not my specialty, but what I've certainly watched happen is that we have poured, hundreds of millions of federal dollars and state dollars into trying to get girls in the classroom more up to speed in math and science, just for example, including Title IX. I think there's been a lot of emphasis on girls and girls learning. And now, of course, in the graduating class from college of 2010 was 60% female and 40% male in this country. So, I think that people that are sounding the alarm that, oh, dear, we've kind of left the boys behind in all of this, I think that there is some element of truth to that. And obviously not all boys, but I think that we need to think carefully about what it is that they may need that's different and not leave the boys behind at this point, because having a disparate society in either direction is certainly not good for a democracy.
As we do more and more research and more brain imaging and understand even deeper some of these things that we have been talking about, give us a sense of what scientists still want to know. What's the cutting edge of this research at this point?
One of the cutting edges in this research by the Institute of Medicine has had several big study commissions, and their finding is that we really need more research dollars going into studying the gender differences of various and sundry kinds of medical illnesses. For example, women have many more autoimmune diseases, like things like rheumatoid arthritis and thyroid disorders than men have. Males may have different types of heart disease, and if there's a way that we need to treat a male or female differently, because every cell, remember, in our body has, if we're female, is XX, and every cell in the male is XY, and so every single cell has a slightly different set of genes in male and female bodies. For example, actually, some transplant surgeons are now finding that they're transplanting female kidneys into female bodies and male kidneys into male bodies because they have a different chance of surviving and not being rejected by the body. So I think this whole area of what's called gender medicine is really important, at least in my field, in the medical profession, in understanding more deeply what that does in specific illnesses that are more prevalent in males or more prevalent in females.
Dr. Lou Anne Brizendine, the book is The Male Brain. It is just out in paperback. Lou Anne, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, it's been a true pleasure. Thanks very much for having me today.
Thank you.